which was that's a momentum conjugated to time, which you might know is actually usually the energy, or in this case, minus the energy. And we have seen that this also generates time evolution, which you can already see from the simple fact that this generates a flow on everything, but also on the time coordinate. And this is just given by one. So we basically have a four-dimensional phase space, which, again, I have certain difficulties to draw. And in this four-dimensional phase space, we have a three-dimensional hypersurface, which is two-dimensional here. And in this two-dimensional hypersurface, we will have one-dimensional gauge orbits, indeed one-dimensional here. And if you basically count the dimension of the reduced phase space, we had 4 minus 1 and minus 1, and that gives 2. So now we would like to quantize the system, and we would also like to get back to the usual quantization, because what we did was just adding, you know, time as an additional variable, but we have seen that this just leads to gauge transformations, which are these Riemann parametrizations. and we don't really want to allow our wave function to represent basically fluctuations in gauge directions. So now, you know, to understand this heuristic, and the, I have to tell you one thing, which I guess have to tell you later, and this is, so this had a C generates gauge transformation. Classically, but what I want to argue now is that C hat also generates gauge transformations quantum mechanically. And I'm not sure whether you have seen this. So imagine that you have a constraint. You know, you probably know that, because imagine that you have a constraint which tells you that PQ should vanish. So what it actually means, yeah, so what it does is it generates gauge orbits along the Q coordinate and phase space, and now quantize the thing. We have a tilde and a hat, and you might remember that we quantize this thing as a derivative operator. So what you see is that C hat applied to F, to a wave function, Q, in a sense, you know, we said that this does generate the gauge transformation infinitesimally by going along the Q coordinates. So here we get some multiple of the derivative of a function in Q. So in this sense, you know, you can basically see that as a derivative along a vector field in Q direction. And in this sense, it generates translations in Q. And indeed, if you would take exponentiates a constraint, so if something generates something infinitesimally, you can exponentiate it, and it will give you the finite answer. So let me do this. Exponentiate. So this is a self-adjoint operator, and if you take the exponential of IC, gives you a unitary operator. And from the definition, this is the exponential of, so sorry, IQ times S. This is an exponential of actually the derivative applied to a wave function. And this looks a bit funny, but you just apply the definition of the exponential as a power series. And we can express this last result as something so you might have seen that as a Taylor expansion of a function at fq of s around psi q plus s around psi q. So this is a Taylor expansion. So indeed here, the constraint generates translations in Q, and the translations in Q are exactly our gauge transformations. So if you want to have a wave function which is invariant under gauge transformations, we should require that from our so-called physical wave function, C hat applied to our physical wave function should vanish. And luckily, power of quantum mechanics, you know, we had before that only phase space points, don't know how to only these are interesting. So we implement, you know, this by requiring that the constraint on the wave function should vanish. And the other thing is basically we require that only gauge invariant functions are interesting. And we have seen that the constraints generate gauge transformation, and the quantum constraints does the same. So just requiring this already gives us a gauge invariant wave function. And as you say in English, you kill two birds with one stone. I think we have a nice expression in German for that. We only kill flies, not birds. So what we are going to require is that the constraints applied to our physical wave functions have to vanish. And unfortunately, I forgot to mention that first you have actually to represent your kinematical phase space. And to a quantization. And this will be turned into the so-called, so kinematical phase space just means your initial phase space. So in this case, the four-dimensional one. And this will be turned into a kinematical Hilbert space. And so we are doing the parameterized particle. So that shouldn't be, or that will be just the standard quantum mechanics, except that we have now to quantize also t and pt. So you might know that quantizing roughly means, I will explain that later more, if you have a phase space function f, you put a hat over it, and you want, it's a very bad explanation, but you want that these Poisson brackets between two phase space functions give you commutators. And this is times IH bar. And actually, this does not work at all for all phase space functions. You require that for all phase space functions. But it works if you choose a basic set. And so we know how to quantize the unparameterized particle. So start we basically are just copying the quantization, the usual Schrödinger quantization for the unparameterized particle also in Q. So we will have Q acting as a multiplication operator, PQ acting as, we have seen that. As a derivative operator, and we do the same for t. So t hat will be a multiplication operator with t, not very surprisingly. And we have pt, and that will be a derivative operator in T. So let me check. I'm very bad in minus signs. I managed to give you the correct signs so far. for the commutator. Okay, so what else do we need for a Hilbert space? Indeed, we need a scalar product or inner product, and that's very important in quantum mechanics because only then can you compute anything for your interpretation, because that gives you the probabilities. And you know, you might know that for the particle, it's just the L2 Hilbert space over R. So now we have two coordinates, so we just take L2 over R2. With the integration measure dq dt, which just means that for two functions, we define the inner product as two integrals. And actually, I forgot what is the more conventional convention here. I take it to the left, I think. So this is complex conjugation. Okay, actually this is for the free particle. And for the more general case of having a potential, you get here the Hamiltonian of the unparametrized system. So we have our kinematic Hilbert space, and we have quantized all these operators, and now we just need to write the constraint equation, and we have an inner product. So now this is very up in the air. We have an inner product, and we have our constraint, which classically is Pt plus h. And we quantize this constraint. So we put hats over that. So I don't want to write too much. So now we demand that the constraint has to vanish. And we get an amazing equation. Which you might have seen before. It's a German name. This is a standard Schrödinger. It's an Ö. So this is just the Schrödinger equation. And it means if you want to have physical wave functions for totally constrained systems, it actually means you have to solve the dynamics. Because this already is a dynamical equation. And this also applies to gravity. So totally constrained, I just remember you, means that the Hamiltonian for the system is given as a multiple of constraints. So the time evolution is basically given by the constraint, and we require that it has to vanish on the constraint. And as you see here, it means that you have to solve the dynamics of the system. Constrained systems. I should have introduced an abbreviation for totally constrained. So this is basically the biggest reason why quantum gravity, is not straightforward, because one would say that one has only full quantization in a sense if you have all the solutions. And as you might know, you don't really have all the solutions even classically. Dynamics. Let me just drop more names. Also, I don't really know how they have written, spelled. So this is known as the Wheeler-DeWitt equation in quantum gravity. It's the equivalent equation, which means it's a quantum equation, a quantum dynamical equation, which your physical wave function has to satisfy. Okay. So now we have our physical wave functions. And I'll take an arbitrary potential and solve your physical wave functions. That will be in the next 10 tutorials, I guess. And now, you know, I have an inner product. So let's try to compute something. And let's try to see what is the inner product between two physical wave functions. In our kinematical Hilbert space. And do that, and I had this definition, I think, still upstairs. Sorry, it's one bar too much. So any idea what it gives? Okay, it's a bit harder. It's not zero. It's another famous number. So you might remember that time evolution in usual systems is unitary. Do you remember what it means? So let me write it here, and I have to write less integrals. So we know that this is a physical wave function. And that means it solves the Schrödinger equation. And you might have seen this following thing. I hope it's a minus. You get the wave function at time t by evolving some initial wave function at time zero with the Hamiltonian, and this is basically the Hamiltonian evolution. And this, you know, you always try to quantize it as a self-adjoint operator. So this is a so-called unitary operator. Which means that in an inner product, you are allowed to, for unitary operator, for two wave functions, you are allowed to do this. And this would be only, in principle, would be only with respect. It's the definition of a unitary operator. U minus one is not the definition of a unitary operator. It's one property of the unitary operator. So this would be only with respect to the Q integration. But, you know, we can just keep T fixed and write this for just the Q integration. And now, you know, what my point is that if you write this and do the Q integration only, no, I write you one last thing, maybe I should write it here. as you can see, d h bar psi 2 so if you only do the Q integration, this is equal to this is a unitary, and you take the inverse and put it here. So this is now, you know, in principle, this is now with here have Q0. Here we have Q0, and that means Q0, and that means Q0. This means unitary evolution, and that means usually that probability is conserved. Indeed, it would be bad if it would not be conserved. Okay. So we have basically that if we perform the Q integration, here, we get something which does not depend on t. So this is basically something which I write very badly as dieses W, Q, Integration. And you have to integrate something which does not depend on T over T. So now we can tell me what it gives. It's not zero. Gives you infinity. So I have a slight problem here because you say you are only interested in physical wave functions, but the inner product, the kinematical inner product with respect to all physical wave functions is infinity. And indeed, you know, there's basically vanished upstairs this condition that we have to find physical wave functions which are annihilated by the constraints. and oh. For many systems, in particular for gravity, it's one of the other big problems, you have to find a new inner product. Need new inner product to form the so-called physical Hilbert space. Now we have seen that this infinity is, you know, due to a kind of, it's not stupid because it just means that the time evolution is unitary, but it's, if you do the Q integration, you get a constant. So indeed, if you just define the physical product between two wave functions, which are physical, by dropping the T integration, you get something sensible. And what you get is just the usual inner product for the unparametrized particle. So only the Q and that looks a bit arbitrary because we have to make an arbitrary choice of T. But again, we have physical wave functions in this inner product. And I just actually showed you that this thing does not depend on your choice of T. Okay, so now more or less, you know, I gave you an inner product which coincides with one for the unparametrized particle. I told you you have to look for physical solutions which solves the Schrödinger equation. Now, if you go back to your basic quantum mechanics, you can always get these physical solutions by doing this unitary time evolution from some initial wave function, which is at fixed t. So what you find is that you get two equivalent quantizations. You know, so here we've gone through the parametrized particle and found a quantization which in the end is equivalent to the unparametrized particle. And you could do more exercises, which you might do or read the notes, and actually show that you can do further and map the Dirac observables also to the observables to your standard observables in standard quantum mechanics, which in this case are just given by Q hat and PQ hat. So let me mention one thing which we need, and this is, of course, I mentioned that observables and you can, you know, you could try to apply an arbitrary phase space function F to your physical wave function. And then you get some result. But the question is, is this result still in your physical Hilbert space? So does this still hold? Because otherwise, you know, you are not in your Hilbert space anymore, in your physical Hilbert space anymore. And this would hold if, yeah, if this is, if you can commute your observable with a constraint, which means we need the commutator of a physical observable, let's call them capital F because they were called capital F at some point, needs to be zero. And you remember that this at least is consistent because we discussed that for an observable to be a physical observable classically, should take away this thing. Poisson brackets have to vanish. So for observables, now we find that the commutator has to vanish with a constraint, and before it was that the Poisson brackets have to vanish. And this is quite consistent with our general rule, which is behind the other blackboard, that Poisson brackets are converted into commutators. Of course, that is never guaranteed that this actually happens, because constraint and observables might be arbitrary complicated functions. And this rule that all Poisson brackets will be converted into the same kind of commutators does actually does not even hold for standard quantum mechanics. Yes?
Isn't it asking too much to ask if the commutator is zero? Don't you just need to be zero on the subspace of?
Yeah, you are exactly right. Indeed, that needs to be somehow zero if you restrict to the wave functions in your physical Hilbert space. It's a bit harder to make sense out of that because you have two different Hilbert spaces and all these operators might be defined in different Hilbert spaces, but you are right. Okay, but in this case it will, you know, so this has to hold, yeah, indeed.
So in general, if it doesn't hold, then how can you get a complete set of observables?
If this does not hold.
I mean, if
you get an anomaly,
if classically the set of observables would be complicated.
Yeah, and you can't do that.
Okay.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Quantum gravity. no, we will see that. I mean, this is okay. So for gravity, I mean, we have the practical problem that we don't really have. We have 10 observables for 4D, which we can write as explicit wave phase space functions. So you know, the first problem is that even classically, we know in principle there should exist observables, but they are usually complicated functions. So actually, you know, it brings me to my next step. So very good question is, you know, indeed classically, this, you have the same problem. Finding observables classically, it's like solving the Schrödinger equation. You have to solve the dynamics for that. And you might have learned that in gravity, you know some solutions, but basically for solving the dynamics, you kind of need to know all the solutions, which would be very nice and would put many people out of work, but we don't know that. So what we need is, you know, a more practical implementation, and that's where many people disagree what is more practical. In constructing physical wave functions, you know, physical observables, and the physical inner product. Because here, even classically, you have, you know, this would be good if you have classically full control over the dynamics, which actually is sometimes the case for 3D. You can do that for the case of a torus universe. You can read that in Kalips. And maybe a spherical universe, but a spherical universe will have 0 degrees of freedom. A torus universe has 2 degrees of freedom. So you need a more practical implementation of these things so that it might be possible to compute some numbers at some point. And that will bring me to the last point I am going to do about the parameterized particle. Okay, so there are many. Let me finish this. So this finishes Dirac quantization. And I have discussed one constraint. The problem in gravity is we have infinitely many constraints, and they form a complicated algebra, which in 4D is even much more complicated than the extremely simple, beautiful algebra which we discussed in 3D. And the problem is that also these commutators need to be implemented to be able to satisfy this for all constraints at once. And this is another general problem in 4D. Yes?
So maybe can I ask just a trivial question? So at the classical level, so you have four-dimensional phase space, then you impose the constraint, it became three-dimensional. And then you have to fix the gauge, so fixing t equal to tau or something like that. So you have two things. So now at the quantum level, you are imposing this quantum constraint. So, and then you are saying that basically choosing this scalar product is equivalent to choosing the gauge?
People usually claim that implementing the quantum constraints in this way kills you 2 degrees of freedom for one constraint. But you are right, you could also say that the gauge fixing happens in the inner product. You know, so it's actually that it depends on your interpretation. So it's actually that quantum mechanics, you always do this phase space thing, it always happens something in even dimension, and you know, it's related to the uncertainty equation in a sense. Yeah, actually what happens, you know, if you think about it, implementing something strongly here, if you implement strongly that, for instance, the momentum with respect to Q is zero, what does it mean for the fluctuations in Q? It's basically infinite. If infinite fluctuations in Q, so that shows you, you know, what happens is that the kinematical inner product is always infinity in this. I mean, already the you know, the usual kinematical inner product is infinity in these fluctuations. And these are all gauge fluctuations. And in this sense, you are right saying that what you do is throwing away these infinite fluctuations if you implement the constraint, you know, strongly. So this means if you have C, phi, you know, that means, of course, that expectation value in this physical state is zero, and all kinds of uncertainties are zero. So whatever your symbol for uncertainty is, for fluctuations, so the fluctuations of your constraint are zero. That means the fluctuations in your conjugated variable, which are the gauge degrees of freedom, need to be infinity. And that's what you kind of try to throw away in your choice of new inner product. Excellent. So this finishes Dirac quantization. And for general systems where you have more constraints, you have to worry about more things, because then you need actually also this quantum algebra of the constraints implemented. And in 4D, you have structure functions. And usually, it's quite painful. So the question would be, as Andrzej asked, what do we do? If you don't have many observables and really have no clue how to solve this Schrödinger equation, and we don't really have the parameterized particle, but something more complicated, but let's stick with the parameterized particle, and I tell you what you have to do. You know, so what you do is you take your wave function. And you want that c hat has to be zero applied to this wave function. That's the trick. So we write a delta function there. This is our physical wave function. No, so let's. I don't want to write the subindex all the time. So let's. Let's try to make sense out of the thing. And you might remember the representation, you know, of your delta function from Fourier analysis as an integral over I over x and, no, sorry, over some parameter k, which lives in the real line in this case, and x. So now I'm telling you a trick which only, you know, so now I'm doing things which for general systems hold only very formally. So already this representation, the nice thing is that in this case, we can write just this integral over R for a constraint which might be more complicated and has a discrete spectrum. This will not be the right thing to do. But in this case, you know, for the sake of explaining you the principle, I'm going to use that. So we're going to do that. And again, I go back to my other constraint, because let's do that, because it's already there. So delta c tilde hat applied to a wave function. And I'll say it depends on t and q. And here we have the exponential, and that is already the exponential. 1 over 2p let's write this exponential I c tilde s ds, and I want to have an h bar in the exponential. So yeah, 1 over h bar, apparently. And that means I get an h bar here if I do a small variable redefinition. And if I look upstairs there, I know that this, you know, this is given by I h bar d ds, and then I get basically, sorry, psi t q, psi t q plus s integrated over s. So I just integrate over Q. I hope. If you remember, we need it later. If you want to be very sophisticated, due to the integration invariance of your measure, which actually just means that you can redefine this variable, and call that q prime. And integrate over q prime instead of s, and you will find that thing there. So you integrate over q, which gives you something which is constant in q. Indeed, basically, del, you know, so this is sometimes called group averaging, which in this case, you know, R is a group, but in more general cases, it is not the constraints, I mean. But what you do is you take your wave function and make a group averaging over your gauge orbit, and you get something which is invariant, which is constant on the gauge orbit. So it's invariant under gauge transformation because it's constant on the gauge orbit. Yeah. So we have done it for this even simpler system. Let me take this point here. So let's do it for the parameterized particle. Ah, oh yeah. Sorry, I have to tell you something else. So we have seen. So now I tell you the same thing. So you get something which is constant in Q. And basically, if you take two such wave functions and as before for the parameterized particle, compute that in the kinematical inner product, you will find infinity. And the reason, in a sense, is, you know, you integrate something over Q, and you integrate some other thing over Q. Both things are constant in Q. Then you take the inner product where you integrate over Q. So you get infinity. But delta C you know, you hope it is not an operator at all, never, but you hope it's not an operator on your physical Hilbert, on your kinematical Hilbert space, because as you might have noticed, it maps you out of the kinematical Hilbert space. But C itself, you hope it's self-adjoint or symmetric or something, so morally, you hope that something like this holds. Which indeed means, you know, to evaluate your physical inner product between two wave functions which you construct in this super intelligent way of writing the delta function in front of them. So this gives you two physical wave functions if you start with two kinematical wave functions. So these are kinematical. And this together is physical. So we define a physical inner product by dropping one of the deltas. Okay, sometimes I write bars and sometimes commas, apparently, for these things. So it means the same. And you take the kinematical inner product. And I guess as an exercise until tomorrow, you can figure out what this is for the constraints that this is equal to pq. And tomorrow I will tell you what this is for the parameterized particle. And that's the last thing I will tell you about the parameterized particle. And then we can really go on to quantum gravity. Okay, so you know, just apply these definitions and look what you get, and maybe try to interpret what you get, and try to guess what you get for the parameterized particle. Okay, are there more questions?